Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Page 94 in the chapter verse summary 32-33. For living bodies to form, the bhutendriya mano guna, the gross elements, the senses that perceive them, the mind and the modes of material nature, must first be manifest, then assembled. Their assembler is Bhagavat Shakti, the direct potency of the Lord. She does this assembly in two modes of action, sat and asat. Nimesha, we meet the terms sat and asat, which mean cause and effect. In our study of Canto 1, see 1-2-30. Now Canto 2 elaborates. The first mode of assembly, cause, forms uncountable universes that for thousands of ages float upon the causal ocean, the water of the Mahat-Tattva. Nimesha, in 33rd purport, Srila Prabhupada notes, the Lord then, by his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of the Mahat-Tattva, and the water is called the causal ocean, Karana-Jal. At last, the Lord enters into each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the second Purusha, and gives them life. From the Padma Kosha that sprouts from his navel, he gives birth to Brahma. Thereafter, the second mode of assembly, effect, is continued by Brahma in the Visarga creation, which fills out the gross details within each individual universe. Unless the Lord creates him and empowers him, Brahma can do nothing. Hence, Srila Prabhupada states, 33rd purport, that both modes of creation are done by the Supreme Lord. Nimesha, the explanation of asat, or cause and effect, is of great significance, since this title, the chapter is entitled The Cause of All Causes. During a morning walk in Bombay on 30th March 1974, Srila Prabhupada remarked, cause and effect, the Mahat-Tattva. Mahat-Tattva is cause, and this cosmic manifestation is the effect. So beyond that, therefore Krishna is said Mahat-Padam. The Mahat-Tattva is lying at his lotus feet. Samasrita ye para palavam plavam Mahat-Padam. Mahat-Tattva is lying at the lotus feet of Krishna. Okay. So here we're getting the element, the primary and secondary creation, where the Lord actually then effects everything. So here we're taking up to the Mahat-Tattva. Because the Mahat-Tattva means is that you have the living entities, you have their false ego of being the controller and enjoyer. You have time by which activities can be performed. And you have all the elements of creation. Right? You have the bhutas, the mahabhutas, you have the senses, the sense objects, the mind. All these different things are in place, the three modes of nature. So everything's there, is ready. So this is the cause. Because from this, everything else is happening. So then, an effect will be when these are then assembled by Brahma. Right? Means, in other words, they've been assembled into their forms, but to manifest that, that's then what Brahma does. Does that make sense? Let us say you've already designed something. It's there. All the pieces are there. But then somebody gives an order, then you make it. Does that make sense? But all the elements are already there, the whole process by which it will be created, the whole, you know, however it is, the, you know, architecture and technology of it has already been done. It's just a matter of manifesting it. Does that make sense? So this is the difference, why the one is the cause, it's all there. But the cause here, then we see in the Mahat Tattva, then means the Lord is behind everything, but as mentioned before, the living entities, they're the ones that make it happen. So it's this contaminated desire, right? Contaminated consciousness that causes this, the manifestation to happen, right? And the effect is that we have around us what's there. Does that make sense? So there's always cause and effect, right? That's always there. Because at one point there's a cause. Now in between, in that cause, that has to have all the elements and everything in place. But why would those elements be moved in that certain way? It's a cause, right? It's not that the cause and then there's nothing there to move. Does that make sense? So you have all the elements that are there. You have a group of persons and then a loud noise happens, right? So, but it's only because the people are there. We would take it the noise is the cause. But you have to include all the people in the crowd as part of it, right? Because the effect is there'll be a stampede, but a stampede can't happen just by a noise. If we make a noise, there's no stampede because there's people. Then there's and a noise, then there's a stampede. Does that make sense? So the cause has to actually include everything. Right? Then there's the manifestation of the reaction between the cause and all the elements of the cause. Does that make sense? Right? So then we get the material manifestation. Right? That makes sense? So here, then, Brahma is the one that's manifesting this, but this actually coming because of the living entity's desire. But all those things have to be in place, otherwise the desire is not going to do anything. You know what I'm saying? Just as a stampede won't happen if there's not the sound. You know, something that creates fear. But therefore, sound, the concept of fear, the concept of the consequences that can happen due to that fear or that sound, people that they will react in that way is whichever side the sound's on, they will run the opposite direction. So that means there has to be ears, there has to be intelligence, you know, there has to be feet. Does that make sense? So because the living entity wants to enjoy a situation that is actually Krishna's to enjoy, then a false situation has to be created. Does that make sense? So in this way, you can say the living entities are the cause. But the overall picture within what it's functioning is actually the Lord. So therefore, He's the cause of all causes, behind the living entity's desire to enjoy the material energy. is the Lord. Does that make sense? So ultimately what we're trying to do is point out that it's Krishna. This is it. In the previous purport, says, this means that the false ego in the sum total of Mahat Tattva is generated from the marginal potency of the Lord. Right? It's generated from the marginal potency. So that means what's happening there is, because Pradhan, that's external energy. It's just pure external energy, nothing else. But when you put the living entities into it, the ability to combine matter and spirit, that's the potency of the marginal energy. Right? Does that make sense? If you put oil and you put water together, they don't mix. Right? I just take oil, put it here, put water there, they won't mix. They'll stay separate. So you have to use special energy, right, to mix them. You have to take it and shake it, right? Then the two mix, right? well enough to be used. It's not actually a great mix, but whatever it is, it's mixed. Does that make sense? So that ability to take spiritual and material, which are two opposing things, and keep them in the same place at the same time, that's the marginal potency. Right? Because sometimes we hear the marginal potency being counted as a generic potency, not just the individual jivas. Right? So the potency that can keep jivas, which are, you know, live, with the body, which is dead, that combination, that's the marginal potency. Does that make sense?
Is there a personification of the overall?
Basically, you're dealing with Sarup Shakti. So Sarup Shakti means the complete form of the Lord's energy. Right? Whether there's a specific personality that's just marginal, that I don't know. But the Sarup Shakti is the one that arranges all this. Like that. So in this case, you know, basically we generally know as Yoga Maya. Right? And then our perception of this, that's Mahamaya. Right? Because it's all Krishna's energies. So to Krishna, it's just their superior and inferior. You know, like you have better cloth and inferior cloth, but to you it's all your cloth. So one you use for this occasion, one you use for that occasion. But it's all yours. Right? So it's not separate from you. The Maya is that the inferior cloth actually is somebody else's. Right? That's the Maya. So the living entity is using the external energy, and they're thinking that this is mine, but actually it's Krishna's. Right? You give your gumsha to someone else to use, then they don't think now it's my gumsha. No, it's your gumsha. They're using it. When they think it's theirs, then there's trouble. Does that make sense? So, in here is that, and due to this false ego of lording it over the material creation, ingredients are generated for the false enjoyment of the living being. So, that means the subtle creation is already there. But the gross is generated so that the living entity can enjoy it. In other words, it's the secondary, the effect, that is fulfilling. Because the jivas are there. But Krishna has created the whole background behind that. Does that make sense? The living being is practically the dominating factor over the material elements as the enjoyer, though the background is the Supreme Lord. So he's the cause of all causes. So he's the cause. He's created all the things. You could say also the jiva is the cause, why there's the manifestation. Right? But ultimately, it's Krishna does the whole thing. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes, no, yes.
What's the difference between Mahatattva and Pradhan?
Pradhan is only the material elements. It's dead matter. Mahatattva means when Mahavishnu glances over that Pradhan and impregnates it with the jivas and time, right? But this is done through the medium of sadashiv, so that includes ego, right? So then for us it's false ego, right? So then means it's false identity. So when you have the jivas in the false consciousness that I'm the controller and enjoyer, and you add time to that so that there can be means you can act upon that consciousness, right? Because without time you can't act, right? A movement means a movement in time. Time is moving. So when you combine the polluted consciousness with time, then you can actually do something. But Mahatattva is just all that's just ready. It's not happening. Right? So then Brahma, then he actually then manifest the gross that the living entities desire to be involved in. Does that make sense? Any other questions on this? Yes.
Maharaj,
Those are subtle, but here we're talking a little subtler than that. We're talking about the polluted consciousness of the living entity. And the primary creation is subtler than the gross creation. Because gross creation also includes mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right? So the gross body manifests from the subtle body. Right? But then that whole gross and subtle body are dead matter that's manifest or in that those forms because of the polluted consciousness of the living entity. Right? So you always have cause-effect. So what's been affected within that, there's also in within itself the subtle. Does that make sense? Means we have a tendency to go, okay, here's A and here's B. But the in the Vedic, A has A and B, and B has A and B. Right? But because A is prominent in A, then it's called A, even though B is there. And B is called B because B is prominent, though A is there. Does that make sense? So you're taking, you have the Supreme Lord, and He manifests the universes, and then the living entities go into that. Right? So that's all part of cause, but you could say that's the effect of the cause. Right? He's there, everything's there, all the Shaktis, but because living entities want to enjoy that way, therefore a result there is the Mahat-Tattva is created. Right? Same way you can take that, the Mahat-Tattva, it has all the subtle things, that's the cause, then the effect is Brahma's creation, the gross, what we call the physical manifestation. But now let us take that physical manifestation, and within that you have the subtle body and the gross body, and the gross is a manifestation of the subtle. Right? Does that make sense? And then the gross body is there, but the actions of the gross body create the results that the gross body is going to then enjoy or suffer. Does that make sense? Right? Does that make sense? In other words, you're always dealing with, means I'm only saying this not to confuse, it's actually being said to remove the confusion, though it may add to it, is that you always have these definitions that seem to overlap, or contradictory statements, they're never contradictory. What it is it's just moved from the one perspective to another perspective. But the principles that are there always apply in everything. Does that make sense? Sambandha Abhideya approach always apply. Even if you're applying Sambandha, they still apply. Because each element is all part of the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Satchitananda, but Krishna doesn't separate them. We separate them in tattva for understanding. But in actuality, you don't separate them. Does that make sense? In actual working, you don't separate them. Does that make sense? You know, you have the kid, you have the parent, right? You have the situation in which it is. So you could go, okay, now I'm the parent and here comes the kid. Now, as a parent, then I have these options, right? And then they all come down within your mind and then you scroll up and down and decide. I can say, you know, hello, my son, or I could say, you know, what's up? You know, or I could pat them on the head, or I could give them a hug, or I could say, aren't you supposed to be doing your homework now? You know, I have all these options that I could be doing. So, but if you did like that, would we actually consider that human? Right? No, we see this stuff in the movies, right? It means humans don't do this. Right? It's there, but the whole point is you don't make the distinction. Right? There may be some subtle thing, it's just the kid's there and whatever is the situation. So yourself, the kid, and the situation become combined in a result. Does that make sense? So it's just the rasa. Does that make sense? So then, yeah, it's just the rasa. Does that make sense? So Krishna doesn't make these distinctions. like that. But for us who are conditioned, we make the distinctions. The main point is so we can make a difference between what's spiritual rasa in connection with Krishna and is our natural position, and what's material rasa, what in which we continue our material existence. Does that make sense? Something is very attractive. If I dissect it down to all of its parts, it is not attractive anymore. Then I can see it for what it is. You know, now I look at it, wow, that's nice, but I take it apart and that's, well, here's some steel, here's a plastic, you know, here's a little piece of, here's a rubber band, here's a, you know, you have a tape recorder, it works very nicely. You take it apart, it's just these funny little sheets of metal and rubber bands and all kinds of funny stuff's inside there. You know, you'd never think, well, this is what makes it work. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's, you know, so then you can look at it realistically. So the whole point is material energy is broken down so that you see it for what it is. Then you start to compare that to spiritual rasa. When you break it down, the elements are still attractive. Does that make sense? Then you can compare them and see that this is temporary. When you operate it, you get something out of it that's also temporary, and at the same time, there's no satisfaction. Well, the spiritual, you operate it, and it's good, and all it does is get better. You know, doesn't matter how you put it together, it's nice. Does that make sense? So that's what all this is for. So these are all the technicalities of how to understand, and in other words, that you can really understand the field that you're working in. Right? These are really technical details of the field. So all these are all principles, this cause and effect, are all things that are important in understanding the overall picture. Is that okay? Yeah? Anything else? Within each universe, the Lord assumes the Virat Rupa. The cosmic form of God is suitable to be meditated upon by great philosophers. The four Varnas appear as the Virat Rupa's mouth, arms, thighs, and lower legs. Brahma Deva explains the seven worlds, the material and spiritual worlds, the 14 planetary systems, the three planetary systems, and how all of them are to be seen in relation to that great universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this whole manifestation of Virat Purush, the most important is actually this element of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Because that's how then the whole universe is maintained. It's technically maintained through Varnashram. So the proper performance of Varnashram takes care of the universe. Like that. It's not some other mechanical method. Right? Does that make sense? So despite what the individual may think, or what the great politicians of the world or economists of the world, it's actually Varnashram that maintains the whole thing. Right? So any success they're having is whatever close they're keeping to Varnashram. And whatever unsuccess they're having is how far they're going away from it. Does that make sense? So it's actually how, because it's how the world works. You have everything in the universe is the universal form. And so if you take the head, the arms, the stomach, and the feet, that's everything. So that means the universal form is maintained by these four, which are a manifestation of itself. And then how they interact with themselves is proper, you know. In other words, the head does certain things. You don't walk around on your head, you walk on your feet. Right? You don't feed yourself with your feet, you use your hands. You don't protect yourself, sometimes with your feet, but, you know, the feet are used. But the main thing is the arms. Right? And if you're from, you know, North England, I think, then you can use your head also. They're quite good at that. But otherwise, then, you know, the arms are the main thing. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that, you feed the mouth, you know, you don't, I don't mean, unless, if you're below, I think, about 2 years, then there are other methods other than the mouth. I think it does absorb in through the navel or through the top of the head or, I don't know, there's other processes of osmosis, but the main thing is it has to go in the mouth. Does that make sense? So, the body functions like that, so that proper functioning of the universal form's body is called Varnashram. Does that make sense? So, because it's connected to the Lord, it's supposed to be understood and operated in connection with the Lord. So that's why it's Daiva Varnashram. Does that make sense? It means you can operate it otherwise, because in Maya people can, it's all Krishna, and illusion means you simply don't see Krishna in it. So the functioning basically looks the same between Varnashram and Daiva Varnashram. But the difference is that one, you're dealing with the Lord and acknowledge it, and so therefore you come to the same platform as the Lord, or transcendental to the material creation. And the other, you don't recognize that and you become bound. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Human society seems to have a small place in the whole universal affair, so how is it that the Varnashram system is so important?
How is the Varnashram so important if the humans have only a small place in the universe? Well, it depends upon how you're counting human. There's 400,000, so that includes, you know, all the, you know, that includes Brahma, the Prajapatis, the Yakshas, Rakshasas, Kinaras, you know, Gandharvas, Nagas, like this. It includes everybody. So, you know, Indra, he manages the universe, the Kshatriyas, so like that. He gets the advice of Brihaspati, who's the Brahman. When things really get out of hand, then they go to Brahma, who is the top Brahman. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. And then on the earthly planet, the human beings perform sacrifice. And from this, then the whole universe is maintained. Because that sacrifice then takes care of everybody. Does that make sense? So then that will, yeah. So in any case, it's still working in Varnashram. Even the demons follow Varnashram, but they just don't care about Krishna in it. Right? So that means your lower seven planets follow Varnashram. The upper six planets all follow Varnashram. That's 13 out of 14. On this planet, there are, what is it, 9 islands, right? So we see of these 9 islands, 8 of them all automatically follow Varnashram, right? Then on this one, on the Jambudvip, then in this particular portion that we're able to see, then there are people who follow it and there are people who don't, right? So basically, if you want to take out of, you know, then you have 14, I mean, what is it? It's 13 and 8. So that means 21 portions of the universe follow it, and only one may or may not. Right? So this idea that, oh, no one's following Varnashram is an illusion. Most are all following it. The only ones that don't follow it are ones who are uncivilized. Right? Now, uncivilized, according to modern definition, does not mean unrefined or unsophisticated. It means uncivilized, means you don't follow the Vedas. Right? It would be just like this. You have, let's say, janitors. Okay? Now, they're generally considered not the top rung of society, right? But if you check amongst janitors, let's say those who are janitors in, let's say, you know, let's say the Louvre or something, they probably will behave, in one sense, better than the common person on the street, just by the nature of the environment in which they are, you know, what do you call it, janitizing, you know? Does that make sense? You know, they probably, because everybody in there All the people that manage the place will all be very sophisticated and refined and speak nicely. And if they want a job there, they have to also be similar. Though they clean the bathroom and the other guy runs the place. Right? Right? He decides, you know, where the broom goes, and the other guys decide where the painting goes, like that. You know, so he will consider himself superior to someone who works in another place, just in one of the government buildings, who will consider them superior to someone who just sweeps the street, who will consider themselves superior to the guys that actually clean the sewers. And even in the guys who cleans the sewers, as the guys have been doing it for the last 30 years, they're superior to the new punks who've only been doing it for the last 6 months. Right? And the guys and the punks who have been only doing it last 6 months, the guy who's a little bit older and, you know, will punch your face in if you say anything, he's superior to the guy who's a little bit less than that. You know what I'm saying? So that's actually what's going on when the Western civilization calls itself civilization. Within the category of tribals, because they are more sophisticated and refined, they say we are civilized. But actually, they are just more sophisticated, uncivilized tribals. Does that make sense? But that won't sit very well with such, because they're very proud of their sophistication. But in reality, that's the way it is. Because if you check, you know, okay, sophistication and, you know, 15 knives and forks and spoons and glasses and plates and all that to eat a meal. Okay, very sophisticated, very refined. But that still doesn't mean that you're not just like, you're just, all it is your ritual is different than, you know, the tigers, that's all. You know, the big tigers first and little tigers afterwards, then after that, then the hyenas, and that after that, the vultures. You know, so, I mean, they have their orders also. You know? You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter, it's a little more sophisticated, so you consider it better. But technically, it's not. Because human life doesn't start until Varnashram. You're not following Varnashram, you're actually not human. But the great thing about devotional service is you don't have to be human to do it, to be involved. So that's the great point of that. That's why these other systems can't be done by non-humans. They just can't be used. But devotional service is effective even if you're not. But it will create a problem at some point, because everyone in the spiritual realm is human. So at some point you have to develop the character of a human if you're going to be comfortable with those who are human. Right? So that's why it says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. When you first inquire, who am I? Because then who are you? Then you're the soul, you know, servant of God, but you have a conditioned nature, and that conditioned nature is going to have Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra Brahmacharya Vanaprastha Grihastha and Sannyasa elements to it. And you have to decide at which point is it now, right? I have a seed, and it's hot out today, and this is a banyan tree seed, and banyan trees, I want you to know, become very, very big, right? You know, I think there's banyan trees that stretch from here to the temple. They're that big. So therefore, it's hot out today, and I got my banyan seed, you know, conveniently in my pocket, and so when it gets hot, I'll just pull out my seed and get all the shade and everything that I need, right? No, it's a seed. Therefore, I have to deal with it as a seed. Right? Okay, I planted the seed, now I got a little one-inch sprout, now I can get all the shade I need. No. You understand? So, you deal with it what it is. So, therefore, if the conditioned nature happens to be brahminical, you deal with it that way. If it happens to be kshatriya, you deal with it. If it happens to be like this, whatever it is, that's what you deal with, because that's what it is. It's not an illusion. If everybody agrees, yeah, everyone, oh yeah, great shade and all that, you know, can I have a little more shade over here? Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, you know, get it for you, know, take turns, you know, like that. Yeah, okay. Hey, you want some also? Does that make sense? So that's why vox populi is so looked down upon by civilized people. Because it doesn't matter what everybody says. the reality is reality. Right? Means you want that everybody should be understanding and experiencing reality. So therefore, you try to get reality spread to the maximum number of persons. But that's different than, and they may like it, but that's not vox populi. That's individuals who understand the truth, who are acting on that truth, and are committing themselves to the truth. So it may be a crowd, but it's a crowd of individuals. But vox populi means it's just a crowd. They may say we're individual, but the point is it's just what everybody else is doing. Because if it was an individual, it wouldn't be vox populi. Right? It's you're doing what you want to do. Others happen to be doing the same thing. Great, you know. You know, you like black, you're wearing black. Everybody else happens to wear black. Great, who cares? But after 6 months, when black's out of fashion, you're still wearing black. And everybody else has moved on to something else. So it may have looked like vox populi for 6 months, but it wasn't. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's a little different. That's why it's not a civilized platform. So to use it is not... means one can always use things in diplomacy, but diplomacy we know has that element of dealing with the illusion of another living entity. That's diplomacy. The person's a fool. You can't tell him he's a fool because it's a big fight because he thinks he's the smartest guy around. So therefore, when he comes and gives you so much nice advice, instead of arguing with him, you just say, yes, yes. And then he's very proud, and because he's a fool, he doesn't know what's applicable and not. They'll walk off and be satisfied. You may think, well, why should he be like that? And who is he to be satisfied? And he's an idiot anyway. And, you know, but the point is your problem's over. You suffer through 5 minutes of idiocracy, or idiocracy, or idiocy, or... like that, or hideousness. And so then he goes away and he won't bother you anymore. But if you sit there and try to discuss, you could be there for hours. So therefore, diplomacy is how to effectively deal with the various elements of the conditioned natures of people. Right? The administrator is very proud. He shouldn't be proud. And so you could go in there and point that out. And then you might, besides not getting what you wanted done, it may be things you already have done are undone. You know? Or you could go in there and just be humble and deal with it and get your work done and walk off and your work's done. And they think you're a great guy. Does that make sense? That's diplomacy. So diplomacy is actually the appropriate, efficient way of combining conditioned natures so that it actually, the result is progressive. That make sense? So it's not that it's false, it's just what has to be done. Right? Means if you think it, one may think, no, I'm not diplomatic. Then if you really think about it, everything you do is diplomatic. There's nothing you don't do that's not diplomatic. Because you're looking for a result and you're doing what you think is appropriate for that nature of that person. You're not just saying it, you say, I just speak what I think. No, but you think, I speak what I think. So right there, you're already diplomatic. You understand? So even the most straightforward, honest person is just as diplomatic as the next person. Hey, see that 500-pound guy over there with the attitude? Why don't you go over there and tell him he's an idiot? He is. It's true. You know, he never finished third grade. So, and he's bothering people. He's got an attitude. Why don't you go over there and tell him to grow up, Mr. Liberal? Is he going to do it? No, I'm smarter than that. You wouldn't want to do that. That diplomacy. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, it's the same as the uncivilized people who are more sophisticated than another group of uncivilized people claiming they're civilized. It's the same way with people who are liberal claiming that they're liberal. Only the Vedic culture is liberal. Anything outside that's not liberal. So the only real culture, the only real human form of life is Vedic culture. That's it. Right? As addressed right here. But you have to be smart enough to not be caught up in grammarian, get caught up in the grammatical understandings of the language that you can't find the Sanskrit word that says Vedic culture, and therefore dismiss it. Right? That's not called intelligence. Because otherwise, what is this right here? Right? And that's verses 32 to 43. Right? So that means 9 verses. That's here. Right? We've been dealing with this all throughout the second canto. Does that make sense? So the point is when we accept this, then we can actually do something. You can move on. Once you accept something, then you can work with it. Until you accept it, you can't work with it. Right? That's the whole point. If you think you have some other alternative, you'll always be distracted by that. But as soon as you understand, no, this is the system, then you make it work. Now, one may say, no, we tried that, but then if you don't have any alternative, then why aren't you still trying it until you make it work? Right? Businessmen tried business, they failed, so they stopped. No, they kept going until they were successful. Right? You look at anyone who you would call a great man in history, right? You're great philosophers, you're great inventors, you're great politicians, you're great, business persons or academics. From the first moment they were successful. Right? I was reading the guy that, what's it called now? Can't remember, but it's, you have a vacuum cleaner, right? You have this thing where you just, you have a suction thing. And it just sucks in one end and blows it out the other, and there's a bag there that catches it. Dyson's the guy, yeah. So Hoover is, I guess, who invented the original one. So it's to the point where you say you're hoovering your rug and stuff like that. Well, it just means a vacuum cleaner. Then this one guy, Dyson, comes up with something. You don't need a bag. He has this completely other system for dealing with the suction. Before it came on the market, there were over 5,000 prototypes. 5,000. Before he came up with one that he actually put on the market. 5,000. And that's him in his garage, not him in the whole big, 10,000 people factory. That's him in his garage. Imagine what his wife had to say, right? All this junk. It's like that. So finally, after he put it on the market, then she was probably okay. But right? Does that make sense? So 5,000. So then, but he's successful. So that's my point. If we tried it, means how many times? Right? You take all the different people, right? Wright brothers. The first time they got out their little, their little pieces of wood and cloth and that, and put it together, and then they had a 747, right? Or maybe it was a Concorde, maybe it was like that, or maybe a MiG-29, or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but a little hazy on the history, like that. And of course, just like the old saying that you say, Rome was built in a day, and all these different things. There's just, you get confirmation again and again through history that the first time any successful person did something, it was successful. Yeah, isn't it? Right? So you don't have any other economic process. Right? You want to generate money, you have economics. You don't have something else. Right? You want to control something on a large scale, you have the political system. Right? You want to know, you have knowledge and education. So once you accept that if you have society, you have varnashram, then you just work with it until you make it work. You know, there's no self-help books or persons on the planet will say, try it once, and if it doesn't work, you know, hey, throw it out. None of them will say. So that wouldn't be an alternative. So then, as we see right here, is, you know, varnashram is how it works. And it's the body of the Lord, and you want to work with the Lord in this material world, this is what you got. You know, you say, no, I got the deity. Okay, when you're brushing your teeth, where's the deity? The toothbrush, the toothpaste, your teeth? Upper ones, lower ones, molars, maybe the, you know, the canines? Which one's which, you know? And then where's the tongue come into it, you know, like that? And then you got all the saliva, you got the bowl, you got your pot of water. Just go ahead and tell me, where's, you know, that Krishna right there? He's there, but he's there as universal form. So then, if we're so Krishna conscious, then we wouldn't be brushing our teeth because Krishna's not there. So other than sitting in front of the deity and chanting and dancing and taking prasad, you know, charinamrita we could also take, we could discuss Bhagavatam. What else could you do that would be directly, that you wouldn't have to deal with the universal form? And, you know, and unfortunately, the paraphernalia you're going to deal with is somehow not made of the universal form either, so it's going to be a tough one to get away from. You know what I'm saying? If you want to give up in the conditioned state, varnashram, you can do it. Then you have to follow Pancharatra, which means all you do is deity worship. Right? Then, because if you're dealing with then Brahminical culture means Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, all doing Brahminical activities only. No Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra stuff. You can do that. But still, you have all these other little things. If then that means no families, right? That means no grihastha life. As soon as you bring in, then immediately all these other things come in. And even if you're not, you still have to brush your teeth. So how are you going to deal with that? Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes is you can't get away from it because it's Krishna. It's really hard to get away from Krishna since he is everything. So if we accept that, then we just know that this is how it works. So then how does it work? If it went wrong before, what do we have to do to correct it? What went wrong? What actually went wrong? We can have our theories, but those theories are generally theories to how can I throw it out rather than how can I correct it. Because if it went wrong and I actually wanted to correct it, why hasn't it been? Why would it be thrown out? Oh, I cooked the sabji and it didn't have enough salt, so therefore cooking I just throw out the window. No, all I have to do is cook next time and put more salt. Oh, now I put too much salt, put less salt. Ah, there's the balance. Okay? But just because it didn't work didn't mean you throw out cooking. Because otherwise you throw out varnashram, you throw out human life. You throw out human life, you have animal life. You have animal life, that means you have 8 million species to choose from. And how can you say which one is the authorized form? Right? How can you say which is the correct form? You know? Crows, you won't see their nest. You never see crows' nest, right? Crows are, you know, considered of birds, probably one of the lowest of the birds, right? You know, swans at one end, crows at the other. The crows, you will not see nest, even though they're considered so gross. Right? Dogs, you do. So which one is okay? Because some people are conservative. They don't like to see everybody out in the, you know, in the park and doing this and that. And others say it's fine. So which of those animal species of life are you going to say is okay? Right? You have a community. You have your community, how you say, committee. So which forms of animal life have they authorized? Right, because it's community, this should be common. At least it should be, at least it should be compatible animals. You know, like you can keep cows and sheep, you know, together, and goats. They also move around pretty good. Pigs are kind of okay on the side, but you know, they move around. But don't let them get in charge, right? You know, like that. They're as bad as the farmer, you know, like that. So, you know, it's like, so then what is it? It's why. Therefore, human life, then it's already set. What is human life? There are standards. But as human beings, you're individuals, you have to understand how to apply it. Right? How do you apply this varnashram? What is the art? Because science is not enough. Does that make sense? Science is not enough. You're driving down the road and you're turning to the left. Your car starts to skid. The science is, therefore, you turn into the curve. Means whatever way it's going, you turn. So that means you turn right. So how much right? Full lock right? No. So the science is there, but you still may crash if you don't know the art. How much to turn. And then, okay, we turn, now he's still turning right. No, but now we stop turning, now you got to turn left. No, but nobody told me about that part of the science. You know, this is all bogus, you know. Why can't... No, turn back. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. If it didn't work, means either the science wasn't understood, or if it was, the art of application was not understood. Right? So this is the difficulty. So then you have the smartest on one side jumping up and down about the science but have no clue about the art of application. And then you have the other guys who are simply interested in the art of application, where you're concerned with the time, place, and circumstance of the individual but have no idea what the science is. And this, by modern, you know, so-called, how you say, sophisticated tribals call this conservative and liberal. Right? But that's not Vedic. Vedic's not conservative, Vedic's not liberal. Vedic is the proper combination of the two that is prosperous for human life to progress back to Godhead. So that's called the middle. That's the middle path. Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions on this? Or no? Okay. So then, 5.2. Question 34 is asked by Narada of Brahmadev. Right? Because remember, there were questions asked by... There were three questions asked by Sukadev. I mean, not Sukadev. Pariket Maharaj to Sukadev. Then he referred to this story. So then those three questions are answered in these same questions and answered of Narada and Brahma. So now this part here is going to be comparing all those. Question 34. Please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. 5.3. The questions in verse 2 through 8 that follow Narada's first are items or sub-questions of the above principal question. Three of these sub-questions are reflected in Pariket's three questions to Sukadev in the previous chapter. This is why Sukadev referred Pariket to Narada's questions of ages past, as if to comment, "What you're asking isn't new. Long ago your questions were asked by Narada of Brahma." For the purposes of the study guide, then, the questions of King Pariket at the end of the previous chapter collapse in this chapter into the leading question that Narada put before Brahma. 5.4. 5.3.1. Comparison of Narad's first sub-question with Parikit's first of three questions in the previous chapter. Narad's sub-question 1. Please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? Parikit Maharaj's question. I beg to know from you how the personality of Godhead, by his personal energies, creates these phenomenal universes as they are, which are inconceivable even to the demigods. Right? So one's coming in because he's trying to figure out who Brahma, you know, that what the Supreme is, and he thought it was Brahma. Then he gets an idea that it's not. So he's coming in, well, there's a world, but there seems to be something beyond. The other one is, the Lord's beyond, how does he create here? You understand? Comparison of Narad's second sub-question of Parikit's second of three questions in the previous chapter. Narad's sub-question 2. My dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy? Note, in essence, Narad wants to know whether Brahma is independent and self-sufficient in knowledge, protection, work, position, and creative energy, or whether Brahma merely assists another or others. Parikit's question 2. Kindly describe how the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. Note, here too the essence of the query is about the relationship of the one creator to others involved in creation, namely his expansions of whom Brahma is one as the Lord's Rajaguna avatar. See again in the reverse? We're seeing that's the same question like that. So, but also just interesting to note is that he's asking all these different things because these are how society functions, right? Knowledge. Whose protection are you standing? Because for anybody to be functioning, there has to be protection from somewhere. Even if you say there's a king, no, he doesn't answer to anybody, or he's the emperor. Still, he has the Brahmins, he still has the Shastra, he still has God. Because his authority for being able to be the emperor is given by God himself. Not necessarily personally, it means generic. Does that make sense? Because it's been created, like, you have money. The concept of having money is not foreign to any group of persons. Right? There's something of value that can be adjusted for something else of value. Right? Because that's been created by God. Right? Relationships, that you may have intimate relationships or acquaintances. All cultures accept that. Right? I mean, the concept that somebody's married, and so therefore others don't, you know, try to create any problem for that. That's accepted everywhere. Right? So where did this come from? Where does that authority come from? Right? So it's come from, because that's the way Krishna created it. Right? This is the primary creation. So that's what he means. That whose protection are you standing? You seem to be the top in the universe, but you appear to be working under someone else's protection. Right. And under whom are you working? You know, under the protection, but you have to do something. Why you'll be protected unless you're doing something? Right? You may say, oh, well, the child's not doing anything. No, they smile a lot. You know? Like that. Therefore, they're being protected. Does that make sense? Then, what is your real position? And do you alone, okay, like that. But you see is that knowledge, the work that one's doing, and the background of that, what is the support of that? It means you have work, but it has to be supported. And there must be knowledge. Right? So work, that's your abhideya, right? Your mode of passion. Your support for that, that's your sambandha. And your knowledge that you're working with, mode of goodness there. Does that make sense? So you have to have all three. So he's asking, what is this? Because otherwise, why these questions? Why not other questions? Does that make sense? But these are all the essential. How is it all functioning? Does that make sense? Today is what day? Thursday, okay. So then we'll continue with this third point, and then the specific answers, and then move on from there. We'll continue tomorrow. Jai Ho Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Samaveta Bhaktivarinda Ki Jainita Gaur Premanandi Ki.